afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 233rd edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a bi-weekly, half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as new Mainers. This is part two of a two-part series. My guest today is Abdi Iftin, originally from Mogadishu, Somalia, and now an American since January 2020. He's the author of the memoir called Call Me American, which was released in 2018 through Vintage Press, a division of Penguin Random House Books. On his first interview back on December 17th of 2017, Abdi described his childhood and how he was able to make his way to the United States. Much of this is detailed in Call Me American as well. During today's interview, we're going to talk more from a bird's eye view of what it's like to be an American now, after all that striving, and what it's like to write a book about the whole process. So welcome back to New Mainers Speak, Abdi.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back again.
For much of your childhood, you longed to be an American to the extent that people called you America. And this past January, you became a U.S. citizen. I wondered if you could tell us about that day. Was there part of the naturalization ceremony where it felt like your dream had come to life and everything was in extra sharp relief?
I think January 17, for those in Maine that day, it was a freezing day. We had snow on the streets. It snowed overnight. But it was a sunny day, and each moment built up a very deeply emotional feeling in me. I mean, I woke up with a journalist sitting in my kitchen, wanting to capture every moment. And here I am taking a shower and putting on my blue suit and my stars and stripes tie, the American flag. I was ready for it. I was really, really, really excited. And why was I excited? Well, first of all, even though I was 34 years old, I had never had a legal document that has my name, either a passport or an ID. Well, the green card, yes, of course, but it's not a nationality. So even though I grew up in Somalia, I didn't have a nationality document. Nothing. No birth certificate, no passport. So I think that day, I kind of felt a shift or a switch kind of happening in my own life. You know, I went up and friends of mine who had known that this was happening just came together, hundreds of them. I have a few friends who flew from Arizona just for the moment of that and stayed in a hotel. And then they walked up to the Portland Pier, which is a huge building that sits by the water. Gateway Ocean is what's called. Oh my goodness. I think the moment that the switch turned on was when I raised my right arm with 46 other immigrants from 26 different nationalities, all raised the same hand, and we took the Oath of Allegiance. And that Oath of Allegiance and the words that followed from the people at USCIS, United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, saying, "Congratulations, now you are American citizens." So those were the words that actually brought tears in my eyes. You know, I couldn't believe it. It basically just happened, you know, and all the hags, you know, and people taking pictures and Americans. You know, I think what was so moving also was like, other than a few immigrants that came, it was a bunch of white people who just came to witness the Abdi who had the long American dream. His nickname was Abdi the American. The nickname becomes my nationality. I'm a truly Abdi the American.
Against all odds.
Against all odds, yes.
That was an amazing day.
Gosh, yeah. And I you know what was so exciting is, well, they said, "Congratulations, you're now a citizen." And then they said, "You have to know that now you can vote. You can run for office. You can serve in a jury. You're an American. You can go anywhere." And each time the woman said those words, I think my heart has been beating faster. I believe no American ever feels this way. Things like that, people should bring their kids, because students who came over could not believe, you know, how emotional it was. And I walked up to the desk before we left and I registered my name as a Democrat. And I said, I'm going to vote, you know, and then I voted in the primaries this year. And then we partied the same evening, January 17th. We invited friends to come together at the Yarmouth Library here in this town. And I stood there. You know, I let everybody take the mic and say what they want. And then they were talking about the emotional moments, you know. And local television has captured my day story and it's been aired on the news that evening. And local newspapers also wrote about it. So what does this mean? First of all, I became a Mainer, a real Mainer, not the immigrant guy anymore, right? And I became an American. And I call here home. I know it's very sad. It's a bad time. But now I think you know what I mean by, I hope that America stands up to those expectations, to those tears that were on my eyes, to those emotional moments. And then when I think of today's America, racism, discrimination, xenophobia, I don't know. It just feels like a betrayal of what happened that day. It really does. The president doesn't understand, you know. People who hate us don't understand. But if you really think that I hate this country, if you think immigrants don't care about this country, you should have been there that day to just witness it. Even though the allegiance of oath that I took said, give up loyalty to your country of origin, I still had tears in my eyes. What does that tell you? I love this country. I don't hate my native country. But that moment is a moment that I have worked on for my entire life. And if you tell me that I don't deserve to be here, that I am not as equal as everybody else, that I am a threat to this country, it's a betrayal. And you're not a true American. The true Americans are the people who came up there that day and just had tears in their eyes and partied with us.
It's part of the dream.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And I think the immigrants I've met certainly have a better understanding of what it is to be an American than an American with no cultural reference elsewhere. You know the difference, and you've chosen it for yourself under great peril. And with just a fair amount of luck and hope and all kinds of, you know, little things wired together to make it happen, I can't even imagine. I can't imagine what that day must have been like. We strive so much of the time, strive. But that's one day when you just were right where you wanted to be all along.
Yeah.
And I think we're awfully lucky to have you.
Thank you. It feels liberating. And that was a liberating day, I think. Liberating from what? From the stress and anxieties, because I could have been deported before I became a U.S. citizen. Just for no reason. You don't even have to commit a crime. But they just say, you're not American. You're not, you know, an American. So that's the fear that I lived since Trump was elected. Taking the oath and becoming a U.S. citizen, now with a U.S. passport in my pocket. You know, I can't stand up to these bullies and flocks, you know, so I'm not gonna give up.
I like
fighting
for
the American dream.
Oh, yeah. Don't give up on it. I like that you invite everybody to go to a naturalization ceremony and watch it. It really is something. I've been to a few, and I'm struck by them and moved by them every time. They move around to different schools and children sing songs and perform things and there's art. And the feeling at these events is powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, each person has a story.
Yeah. And I think it's a turning moment. I think every American, one way or another, should really go and experience what it means for people to become U.S. citizens. Okay, so 46 different nationalities that day. 26 different nationalities, right? Guess who included? A British man and a French man and a Portuguese man. I mean, like, Europeans are with us.
Oh,
alongside
sure.
A Somalian, Sudanese, and Burundian. You know, and then it just shows you what America is. That's America. That's the definition of America. America is a land of immigrants. And we all took allegiance to the flag and to this country. And I'm really not ashamed to say I'm more patriotic than many native-born Americans. And I think 46 of those of us there that day are more patriotic than people who were born in this country but don't understand what this country is all about. So if they really think that immigrants are not adding anything to this country, oh man, you're wrong. You know, we're not just popping up from the ground like a plant. We have been through a lot. There's talents we bring with ourselves. We're just taking all the courage and whatever we can to learn the English language by also speaking our own native language in addition that so many Americans don't have. And here we are loving it and becoming nationals of Americans. And in the future, if I have a baby, my baby's going to be an American. Just the same way like your own great-great-grandfather or maybe even your mom, your dad came from somewhere else, came to this country by boat and had you, right? That's America. I'm not saying I want my kid to grow up not speaking Somali, but I think the beauty of this country really includes inclusion, the diversity.
Makes us strong.
The different food, yes. It makes us strong and it makes us very exceptional. That's why people don't go to Russia and China. That's why everyone in this planet dreams. That's why there's the American dream. I've never heard of the Russian dream. Or the European dream. Doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In reading your book, I was struck by the contrast of what you were seeing in the streets of Mogadishu and the ones you were imagining in the U.S. as you watched Rambo and other films. What did you think life would be like here as a Muslim man, as a black man? And how's that measuring up to your expectations?
I mean, I was hoping that... honestly, I was hoping when I learned America by way of movies, I was hoping that I wanted to live in an environment that's welcoming. If I wanted to practice my faith and walk up to the mosque, that I could do that. If I wanted to not do that, that I wanted to not do that. You know, but I was hoping to be accepted, not based on my similarity, not based on because I want to eat bacon or I want to eat pie, you know, things like that. But I was hoping that in America, it should be okay to be a Somali, completely okay to be a Muslim, and completely okay to speak Somali, you know? But then I realized that as you come into this country, I have to explain a lot of things because not many people understand. You know, I mean, I have to find myself compromising a lot of things in my own culture to just fit into this society that, you know, that we live with today by doing what they do, by fixing what kind of food we fix, by shopping at their, you know, stores. So I don't think there's a lot of energy put into, by the society, into understanding or accepting, you know, the way of life that we do in Somalia. So with that, it comes with the stress and sometimes the culture shock, you know, and things like that. So I have technically Americanized myself in so many ways, you know, to just realize, you know, you cannot really be straight Somali in this country. You can't just, you know, wake up, wear your Maui's, you know, and run around. That's not how it works, you know, because that may make you look like weird person because that's not how they dress in here. So I put on my pants, and if I go hiking, I just put on whatever Americans put on, you know, and just go for a bike ride, drive, you know. There's no tea shop that they have outdoors. It's just Dunkin' Donuts. That's the only way that you can go, or Starbucks. So it's like really getting to know the American. I'm not from Europe. If some people migrate from Europe, they might understand the system here. But to me, it's just every little bit of thing out there is just educational. You have to learn.
Sure. Did not grow up with refrigerators.
No.
If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Abdi Iftin. Not only is he a student at Boston College studying political science, but he is also an advocate for refugee organizations such as Refugees International, Chicago Refugee Coalition, and Oxfam. Abdi is the author of a book called Call Me American. In your book, you take on some really big themes, things like female genital mutilation, tribal divisions, religion, and punishment. You're talking about things that are not always comfortable topics, and you've met with some pushback from people. I wondered if you'd want to explain what that's looked like for you. What's that been like?
Yeah. You know, these are the things that were begging me a lot, you know, back in Somalia. I understand it's a culture, but I think if we don't talk about it, we're not going to resolve this. women in Somalia have certain limitations on what they need to do, but it's mostly men dictating things. You know, FGM is widespread in Somalia because men are happy, because men want women to go through that so that they can marry her, you know. And if I'm that man who is from Somalia and who can really speak up against this, it just is the start of a real conversation, which I already feel like it's happening. However, these are taboo, and you could risk your own life talking about these kind of things because you're really diving deep into the cultural elements that were never questioned. You can never question these kind of things, right? My own family don't agree with me taking a stand on this, you know, side. And I'm rebellious, you know. I really like to think freely and think my own way and come to a conclusion. And I'm not technically saying America has changed me or turned me into a feminist, you know, depending on how you define feminism. But the only thing that I can tell you is if I was born a woman, I would not be here. My sister, who's younger than me, has been married 14, now has 5 kids. That would be me, okay? So I need to know that. I need to know that I took advantage of my male privilege. And I need to know that that puts me higher than, you know, certain women. And if I don't mention that, I'm sort of betraying my own story. And I really wanted to include that. Yes, I got a pushback and definitely angry voices and faces from members of the community, but that was not unusual. The thing is, it was a way to bully me into not really speaking public. There were certainly a group of men that organized a mob to send emails to try to stop me from speaking those kind of stories, social media smearing, you know, which basically happens when you become somebody. These have all failed, mostly because I think usually the truth wins. But the truth is painful. I don't know if you know, there's a Somali author, her name is Ayan Hirsi. I don't agree with everything that she says, but I totally disagree that she's been disowned entirely by the Somali community by speaking up and writing memoirs of her own story. And so somehow it's really not easy to publish a memoir like this, talking about your own stories within your own community. So you definitely have to get a backlash because you can't make everybody happy. The only way that you can make everybody happy is to cover up. And I did not want to do that. But I also, as my male privilege has really somehow worked because I haven't received as intense heat as if I was a woman, right? Because being a woman, man will just not like when you start speaking up. And I'm not giving up. So by now, I work with a group of young Somali women as well who are desperate to tell their stories. And I'm one of a rare man who just says, yep, I like it. I really like that you're talking about your story. You should not have been through this FGM. Just talk about it. Your mom was okay with it. Let's talk about it. It's okay. We live in a different world. Your story matters. But how about backlash? How about if they kick me out of the house? Just put up with it, okay? Just leave. You live in a free world, find an apartment, and your family will come to realize the truth, and then they'll get back to you.
Wow, it's a powerful stand.
Yeah.
I think the key word here is taboo.
Yes.
You know, it's the shoot the messenger kind of thing. Mm-hmm. When the person comes in and says what you don't want to hear, it's just easier to knock them off than to realize what they're saying needs to be heard.
Yeah.
It's courageous.
Yes, it is. Yes. And I should say, as a writer, don't ever get anybody bully you. Don't ever get anybody edit or censor what you want to say. As long as you are truthful and are really speaking from, you know, an honest heart, just go ahead and write it. How many Somali women are raped and are sexually assaulted in our community by members of our community? They don't talk about it. I'm not making this up. It is within the community, and I would love them to have taken advantage of the Me Too movement and, you know, get this man who's actually doing this kind of a thing up there, and let's talk about those issues, because if you do, we're going to have thousands just merge the same way that you did, you know, so it's not happening. How about that young girl who was deceived into going to Somalia and she had been through the FGM, and she came back here, and the teachers at the high school figured it out, and they went to the doctor, and the parents now are at our court, you know. How about those things? Do we need to talk about those things? Yes, we need to talk about those things. We need to put the parents up there to just tell them that they're wrong, because these young girls are suffering, you know. How many times did I try to hang out and date a Somali woman, and the parents said, no dating, you guys need to get married? How many times did I get frustrated? And because of that frustration, in chapter 16, I put part of that story to really sort of like put it out there as a reminder that we need change, right? That there was someone I loved so much, dearly in my heart, and it was the same. She loved me back. But the parents are just so ridiculously attached to
tradition.
To tradition. And even though we respect the tradition, we also want, you know, to be our own people, to figure things out our own way. And when we decide, you know what, I just want to settle down and have a baby. If we agree, let's do it. Mm-hmm. We were not even there. It was just 2 weeks into this thing. And now here we go, you know. So I didn't like those kind of things. And so I had the courage to definitely write that down as well.
Where does this courage come from?
I think it comes from being who I am. I'm not saying I'm the only one who has the courage. Every member within our community has the courage, but some people don't want to say it because they find it shameful, taboo, or things like that. To me, there's nothing taboo. If you're gay in the community, come out. I don't find it taboo. You're totally fine. I want to accept you as who you are. Don't be afraid of what your parents are going to feel, okay? I think we need some strength, and that's what I carry myself. I mean, particularly speaking right now, there are certain parties of the Somali community that I'm not invited to come. You know why? Because I said things that are taboo, that are unacceptable.
You broke ranks. Like, nobody would know people were being sent home to Somalia for female genital mutilation unless you were talking about it. Now people know, and now they assume things, and we don't want them to assume things about us.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but also I find it cheap when someone says, you're just really giving the Trump people some credit. Not credit, but like you're just giving them a win.
Fueling the fire.
Right. By really telling them the shame things like that. And then, you know, the only thing I would say is this true or no? Are we really talking about something true, or am I just making this up? As long as this is true, I don't give a crap who feels what. So I'm going to go ahead and say that, because I think it's not, Trump people are not my audience, but I'm also talking to the progressive liberal Americans who have no idea who we are. It's important that they get to know us, that we're humans, we're nice people, but we also have taboos and things like that. Okay, if we don't talk about that, I don't want to just sit here and keep saying, we're a community, just leave us.
I don't think there are any communities that don't have their taboos. They're just different things sometimes.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. There are a lot of people that live with a lot of secrets.
Right.
So your book was just re-released last week with edits around some of the more graphic grief scenes and then with additions. This time your book's aimed at young readers. What do you want young people to get from your story?
Okay, first of all, we are in a time in America where we need to empower our young ones. Speaking from racism to discrimination to the way you see immigrants and refugees. My first edition, Call Me American, was inappropriate for young teens and anybody under 16. They couldn't absorb the painful memories that I talked about, including a loss of a family member and burying my own sister when I was 7 years old. This is something that most American kids don't understand. And I toured around schools talking to kids, and I memorized all their questions. They have lots of questions. They motivated me into thinking of answering those questions. And I, you know, the questions that they ask is just basically, you know, something like, what was a childhood like in Somalia? What games did you play? What was going on through in your mind? Without school, did you feel free and happy? You smiled. Why did you smile? You played. How did you play? With an empty belly, you know? You loved your mom. When you lived on the streets with no home, how did that even happen? When some of us just get angry and maybe want to move out of our houses because mom texts the video games, you know? And I loved it so much. And I listened to these kids, And every time I came back from speaking to them, I would just not wait to sit and put together those thoughts. And those thoughts are put in this new book to really answer to them how I did it. So what does this mean? This means if they read The Young Adults Who Called Me American, they get motivated into becoming better humans, into not only loving this country, but also loving the world and those of us who basically come here. And I think I see it as a cross-border thing, you know, where many Americans aren't exposed to those kind of stories. You know, you don't understand. You see Somalia as one place in Africa, but you don't really, you know, understand what people go through and how agile living there through the famine and the civil war could just even survive to become this grown-up man who stands in front of you in the class, dressed up nice and talking to you, you know, and remembers all your names without me acting like I'm really mentally not fit. Because I went through that, you know, I'm not saying that. So it sort of encouraged them to go through the difficult days ahead, if there is any. And maybe to also appreciate what they have. Roof over their head, clothes in their bags, food on the table. Possibility of going to college, you know, after graduation. Possibility of finding a job. And maybe become better Americans that way, you know. And maybe that will help break down the sense of racism, discrimination, because I think to those little kids I spoke to at high schools across the nation, if they grow up, finish college, I think what I told them helps them to carry through their years to come. But they also need to continue this. It's not only Call Me American. I am also taking advantage of this podcast now by saying, if you're an immigrant, please write your story. It helps. It changes, it adds, it contributes to the progress of not only this country, but to the whole world. Do it, man, do it.
I think your mom would be so proud of you because she cared so much for her stories that she had memorized and shared the things that she'd done in the bush and the things her relatives had done in the bush. And now you write your story down, which is part of her story. And you encourage everyone else to write their stories down. And then those stories can get into so many more brains, so many more ears and eyes, and it changes what we think about the world. We certainly don't learn about most of the world in school.
Yeah.
So this is a way to educate ourselves through your stories, through your eyes. I think it would be very hard to read your book and then have a thought where you want to say to somebody, go back to Somalia. I don't think you could do that.
That's right.
So what's next for you, the big dream? What are you hoping you'll be doing in 5 years? And, you know, what's the big picture look like for you?
It's really hard to tell, but I think I'm ambitious that I would pursue the storytelling narrative to change the world. And I will go on any platform or form that I can to do that, if it includes empowering young immigrant writers, or even if it is young, native-born American writers, you know, anything that I can do to get storytelling out there, from taking off from my own story and taking off from my own experience. So I kind of want to build that platform where we can interact, we can tell stories to each other, we can bring music into, you know, there. That's what I envision for the next 5, 10, 15 years, I guess. I'm not looking forward to moving to an expensive city and disappear. That's not me. I'll always be there available for anybody.
Do you have any places that you'd like to travel to now that you have an American passport?
Gosh, yes, there's a long list of things. Actually, I haven't even discovered the whole country yet. There are a lot of places that I've not been to, and those some places that I have been to that I didn't have enough time to see. But I also love the world. I just want to see, I want to go back to where I came from, not this time as a refugee, but as a U.S. citizen, and see that, see the power that that really has, something that I need to put in my next book as an experience. But I respect and love the beauty of this planet that we have. I would love to go on long trip, road trips, you know, if possible, or sometimes even just go, you know, see other people, other differences, other cultures. Like, I've never been to Asia. I have no idea, you know, unless I generalize, but, you know, I would love to just see the beauty of life there and, you know, how people do things. And so I'm adventurous, and I think I'll be using that a lot.
Yeah. As a child, you had very few options open to you. You could become a soldier or an imam. And now you are an author, a student, an advocate, and you're making your own American dreams come true. I wish you all the best as you continue to navigate life's challenges and travel around the world and encourage other people to become their best selves.
Thank you, Kate. I appreciate that. And thank you so very much. It was wonderful talking to you.
As ever, the views shared in this program belong to the individual sharing them and not necessarily the station or the University of Southern Maine. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Abdi has selected for us. I wondered if you could tell us about why you chose this song.
You know, I really wanted to keep an eye on the immigrants who are becoming musicians in this country. And I wanted to select something that's pretty close home. And I found these young Somali immigrants in Vermont who have the name A2VT. VT standing for Vermont, and A standing for Africa, Africa to Vermont. So the song that I have is Fas Wa, and it is kind of a like rap music, and it includes English and Somali together. And I think it just speaks, you know, about the moment, the joy, the diversity, you know, and the struggles of everyday life as a kid.
What does Fas Wa mean?
Fas Wa means just, it is, A to VT.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
If you wanna do, we can do it my way. If you wanna go, we can hit the highway. The way she thought, the way she walked, gotta say that she wants my work. Wanna make it more, she already know. She's the only one I want, girl. The way she talk, when she talking, the way she walk, when she walking, the way she dance, when she dancing, the way she move.
Amazing.
Yo!
Don't know.
Yes!
Now you know.
Yeah, mom!
You know what I'm saying?